packet pushers.
Welcome to Day 2 Cloud, you amazing human you. Today we're talking about, well, it's a difficult topic. It's all about hiring and how hard it is right now to get a job in technology and what both the hiring team can do and what the interviewee can do to make the process a little bit better. But we're not going to do that alone, right, Kyler? We've got Andrew Brown. He is from Exam Pro and he has some things to say. What stuck out to you in the conversation?
I think it was interesting how we talked about this idea that Cert Mills pitched this idea to you that you're going to do their certification mill for, you know, 3 months, 6 months, this boot camp, and then you're there and you've learned everything and you're good to go for IT forever. And really, it's a growth mindset and you need to think about it that way, or wherever there is, you'll never get there.
You can't speed run your career. And I think that was a key takeaway for me. So enjoy this conversation with Andrew Brown. Andrew Brown, welcome to Day 2 Cloud. We're pretty excited to have you here to talk about hiring. It's a scary time out there, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's quite different in the market right now.
So before we get into the topic at hand, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, sure. I'm Andrew Brown, and I'm the co-founder of Exam Pro Training Inc., which is a company that creates educational materials for cloud. One interesting thing about our company is that we produce a lot of free content. So I'm not exactly sure how we make money, but we do. And, you know, use of that content can manifest itself as certifications or project boot camps. But really, we're driven based on whatever the need of people in the market are. And so just like with this conversation, it feels that there is a need for more stuff on the career side. And I think that's something I'm going to be making a lot of in the next 6 months to a year.
The genesis of this show, you made a post on LinkedIn that I saw and it really resonated with me. And I'm just going to quote your post. You said, "We need to have a real talk about getting hired in the tech/cloud because I'm researching every day for others and my brain is just melting with the current obstacles," end quote. I felt that deep in my heart. And so I was like, we just need to have Andrew on to expand on that basic premise. So can you just expand a little bit on that and then we'll dig into specifics as we go?
Well, this came about because I ran a boot camp recently. And actually before that, before the boot camp, I was just my whole goal is to help people get into tech, right? So anything I produce, it should be trying to get people closer to that goal. And so certifications at the time when I started 2016, 2018, I noticed there was an opportunity where if you were even talking about a cloud certification, that was enough to get you interview. As time went on, more people became certified and the barriers became a little bit more difficult. But everyone was saying, well, we need projects, we need experience because nobody's hiring us with certifications. We're not even getting job interviews. So I said, okay, what are you doing for projects? People said, we don't know. We don't know how to build a big project. So I said, okay, great. I'm going to spend the next 4 months. And I ran a free boot camp with 10,000 students. And you know, they put them through the ringer with one of the hardest free boot camps you've ever seen. And I started checking in with them 6-9 months later. And a lot of them still weren't getting jobs. And so I went, oh, that's unusual, because I was saying that you need certs and projects to show that experience and everybody else was. And so I thought, okay, maybe it's time to go back and look at where these people are applying. So I pulled some of my previous students. I said, show me exactly how you are looking for work and how many people are replying and things like that. And they were putting out hundreds of applications. They had like the resume work. They were making different resumes for everything. They're doing everything that everybody was telling them to do, and they weren't even landing any interviews whatsoever. And even if they did, it was the fact that every job was saying, hey, you got to have 3-5 years experience. So, and they would say entry-level jobs, 3 to 5 years experience. So I went, oh, that's different. And so, you know, that's where we had to take a different approach to looking at the market.
I think that's interesting that you started with the problem is just skills, right? Because that's how we like to think of tech, is it's an egalitarian flat space. And if you have the skills, you'll rise to the top and get the job. And you found that might not be exactly true, because you really need to find the right job. You need to find the right companies that are looking for what you are and not just the broader tech hiring landscape.
To me, it was really surprising that it was such a challenge. But I think as a content creator, it's very easy to become complacent because I'm not the one that has to go out there in the market and try to get a role, especially from day zero in the market. I don't want to blame other folks out there, but I think a lot of people, you know, they're just totally unaware and the market can change in 6 months. But people will keep on perpetuating saying, hey, you need certs. Hey, you need projects and this stuff. Hey, you need to fix your resume. Use this resume template. And people will just feel very frustrated because it's not working.
It's almost like that culture of, here's one weird fix or one weird thing that I discovered to hack the system, which works for that one first person. But then once you tell people, now everybody does it. And I feel like the HR department and the hiring department starts hardening themselves against whatever that exploit was. It's almost like cyber attacks, but for resume and hiring.
I think that is probably some of the components that are appearing in the industry right now. So one thing I noticed that when people were applying was that they were being bombarded with different types of ATSs, so application tracking systems, and they weren't even consistent. It was like every company had their own flavor of it and had different things you had to fill in. So before, when you could go apply to 50 places in a couple of days, now it's taking a considerable amount of time because you upload your resume and then you have to enter it again. And there's boxes where you just like can't fit stuff in. And that becomes an extreme barrier for people to even just apply. Now, we know why that system's in place, because I was doing hiring for companies even a year ago for entry-level cloud roles. And I was getting like 300 to 400 applicants in a couple of days. And when you get that many, and it wasn't even good pay either. It was just like, when you get that many, it's like, how do you sift through it? And then when you're going through that and you see that people are saying that, like, they're trying to break the market from anywhere. Like, they're not even in Canada. They're saying they might be in Canada later on, or they're trying to inflate their experience, then it kind of makes sense why companies would be implementing ATSs and setting harder barriers. But still, you know, is that the right way to address it? Or are they just using the tools that they have to try to deal with that situation?
It is such a difficult problem. And it's so hard to blame these folks, just me personally, because I've been on that part where you, like, you don't have an income and your mortgage is coming, your rent is coming, your bills are coming. Like, they don't pause when you don't have a job. So thank you so much for helping. By the way, I know we'll get into this more later in the podcast, but that's really doing a lot of good in the world. Thank you for helping folks find the right jobs and get employed.
And I think we're just talking about people coming into tech, but I think that there's also struggles on the other end of it, because, you know, I've had friends that they have as much experience as I do, and they were laid off, and then they had to re-enter the market, and they're not having the same level of interest in their resumes, or they want them to move on a point, like they want them to bring down their price point. So, you know, I'm not sure if this is what's happening, but it seems like both ends are being squeezed, and things are going back into the hands of organizations and companies, and it's frustrating for everybody. And everybody knows right now there's like tons of layoffs happening just every other day. Mm-hmm. Like, you thought it, by this point it would have stopped, but it just keeps on going.
It's really unfortunate. And I feel for everybody who's gotten caught up in this wave. It almost seems like a hysteria to a certain degree of just, well, every other company's laying off their employees, so I guess we have to do it too and make our shareholders happy. Whether or not that's actually going to lead to productivity or revenue gains in the future. Do you feel like this is a problem that is specific to certain areas of the tech industry, like ops and developers, or is this something that is just broadly applicable to all of tech?
I mean, I think that I should always contextualize things with my background. And so my background is more of a developer-focused background. So I can't speak to folks that are in cloud networking, IT networking, or other areas. But as far as I can tell, it seems like everybody is afflicted. I do think that there are companies that are insulated by this, because their practices, how they operate their company, is just fundamentally different. I don't want to call it any companies, but I can think of like larger companies that are not necessarily IPO, but they're extremely good revenue and they're very careful about their growth. So I think it comes down to company culture and trying to identify those companies that actually want to retain their talent, as opposed to these ones that have to have exponential growth and have to have a lot of turnover. Obviously, if you're going to look at more traditional industries, like, let's say, nonprofits or schools, because this stuff is tech too, right? It doesn't have to be all these cutting edge companies online, but there's a lot of tech jobs out there where they're still hiring and they can't find work. Up here in Canada, I know the school boards is always looking for highly technical folk, but that's a geographical issue. So, you know, you'd have to move somewhere that's more remote, but you will definitely have a job and eventually you'll have a pension and you're never leaving that job. So, you know, it just has to do with what your goals are. And I think a lot of people are shooting for the moon because they've heard of these $300,000 salaries, or maybe they're just not aware that there is just as much ample opportunity in these other less interesting roles with technologies that are not as fun.
Yeah, it seems to me like one of the main motivations for a lot of folks to get into tech was, A, I want to make a ton of money, right? And rightly so. I mean, that should be a motivation, at least to a certain degree. But also they had this dream of working for one of the big like FANG companies, whether it's Facebook/Meta or Apple or Microsoft, et cetera. That was their idea. Or I'm going to go work for a hot tech startup that gets acquired. And it sounds like what you're saying is maybe that shouldn't be your main guiding light as you're going out on your job search in the tech world.
I think whatever folks' goals are is to advance their career and improve their living situation. And a lot of people say that just even getting a job that's even 50, 60K, and I'm talking Canadian, not even US, they would feel that it's better than previous. But the thing is that they don't look at that as their first target. They never think like, we're going to look up the police station website and see if they need any IT. They're not looking at law firms in their area saying, hey, do they need anything? They're not going to their chamber of commerce and trying to do solution architecting or consulting for companies that could lead to jobs. They don't even think of these possible opportunities. They open up LinkedIn, they open up Indeed, they see the roles there, and they think that's what they have to target.
You make it sound so clear, but I know that when I've hunted in the past, I'm doing exactly those things. I'm on LinkedIn and Indeed, and that's it. And otherwise, I'm just hearing things through my network of people. Is there a place for that in what you're espousing, that like just make connections, make friends, and like a friend of a friend has a job that might be available to you?
I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunities at user groups and other meetups. Some companies, especially in Toronto, their whole purpose of running user groups is a lead gen for talent. So the idea is that if you go and you make a really good presentation, and then afterwards, you know which ones are employees, and then you have long technical discussions. Sometimes they know the hiring manager, or they are the hiring manager, because they need to have some other way, indirect way of filtering talent. And that stuff is still active. Now, it's not as great as it was pre-COVID, but I definitely know here, like in Toronto, I'm not in Toronto right now, but I know user groups that run them absolutely do that. And if you don't have a user group, you need to create your own opportunities. Go create your own meetups and be the educator of what you know. You don't have to lie and pretend that you know more than you know, but you need to get out there and demonstrate informally, that kind of stuff. Another thing that has really helped me is just by randomly helping folks, they have led to opportunities I could have never imagined. And it wasn't my intention. It was just like I was in an IRC group or a Discord group, and I was randomly helping somebody trying to get to their next step. Or, you know, I was talking to business owners and I just said, here, I'll help you build this thing. And it wasn't me trying to get a job. It just always rolled out. Or you build your own thing. So I really like building a new project every other week. And often, you know, the jobs that I got were through me building a thing that somebody else wanted. So like I built a learning platform. These private schools wanted my learning platform. I wasn't trying to sell it to them. I was just super excited to show somebody that would appreciate what I built, and then they wanted it. So, you know, I think there's a lot of opportunity. Now, LinkedIn and Indeed, there definitely are things that you can do. I should say that I know folks that say LinkedIn and Indeed do work for them and they're getting those opportunities, but I generally feel like that's more of an exception than the rule these days.
Yeah. My general experience in terms of opportunities always came through my network of people I know. Like you said, you put good work out there, you demonstrate that you have capabilities and skills around a particular area, and then leads kind of come in that way. Or you get into conversations where somebody just says, oh, I could use some help with this thing and I can pay you X amount. And that just sort of happens organically, as opposed to it being a formal job post that goes through a hiring department that has the ATS in front of it that I had to submit a resume to. That seems to be a somewhat, I won't say privileged position, but maybe like a little bit, to already have that network built. If you're just starting from scratch, you talked about people getting their certifications, getting projects, and how that doesn't seem to be working. So if I am really just at that entry level point, am I just screwed? Or is there a avenue forward for actually breaking into tech?
I think that people need to understand what the whole path looks like, and we need to stop trying to romanticize this idea of flipping this learning experience into 3 months to 9 months into a role, when in reality, think of any career, it takes at least 3 years to get your first role, right? And I'm not saying that certifications and projects aren't part of your journey and they can't be useful. I think that there is a lot of ways of learning. and they have their pros and cons. And there are definitely some strong cons with certifications I have right now that I've been talking about, but there's definitely pros for doing them. And, you know, I think that people have to understand and plan and say, I have to plan for 3 or 4 years to break in, right? And they also have to understand themselves and where their deficit or where their strengths are. Like, I have dyslexia, so I'm really bad at STAR program questions, right? I'm really bad at traditional interviews. And so for me, I've maxed out these other opportunities that I was talking about earlier that don't go traditional routes. What I had to do is make strong emphasis on my work as opposed to my speaking and writing skills. So when I would talk to somebody and, you know, they were kind of disinterested in me as an applicant, I spent most of that time in the interview trying to figure out what it is that they're trying to solve. And then in 48 hours, I come back and solve it and just hand them a repo. And they'd go, oh, you know what I mean? Because they go, this person can do it. And so they say, well, you know, I'm not confident with the way they speak or with the way they write. And, you know, how things are can be very superficially biased. But, you know, people are trying to protect against inexperienced folk. And so I think you have to just understand where your strengths and weaknesses are. And you'll have to figure that out. Right.
When I was coming up, and I still feel like every day I'm learning a little bit more in this different roles that I've taken, I was studying for a Cisco CCIE. It's an expert level Cisco networking certification. And I studied for 13 months. Like, it's a huge cert. It takes a long time to get there. And every week or two, like you said, I would just write something down. I would build a project. It was in GNS3, I think, to virtualize the network and the configs and stuff. And I would share that out as a link and write up what I did and why I did it. And really, they were just notes for me, but I thought, you know, maybe other people will use them. And after 13 months, I sat the cert and I failed. I didn't make it. I washed out because I couldn't go back. It was too much time and money, and I just was done. But that transformed my career for two things. And for one was just like, I got so strong at troubleshooting and just knowledge base was just enormous. That certification was great, even though I didn't get it. And B, I had all of these projects I could point at now that are publicly my name. And if someone would ask in an interview, like, have you ever set up BGP? And I said, well, yeah, I have 5 articles about setting up BGP. You can go read them. I did the work. And I think that's huge. I think that backs up everything that you're saying there, that these are living resumes when you publish your projects. And it's, I also get just so overwhelmed in interviews that, like, I forget everything. I don't remember any of my words. But you can go look at my website. I've done it there.
Yeah, as long as that content is genuinely you, I think that, again, this has to come back to what Ned was saying about people revealing a trick or a hack, and then everybody does it and it's no longer effective. But learning in the public, which is a great thing to do, I think people take it a bit too far and they're like, how do I generate content so that I can demonstrate my skills, as opposed to just trying to solve things they're working through and finding real value. And, you know, people are just trying to stack projects and write articles. And I mean, I guess you can strategize for trying to learn in public. But, you know, I think the best stuff that you will produce is the stuff that you figure out that is actual value to you, because then it will actually be a value to someone else, not just making content for the sake of making, because you're supposed to learn in public.
Yeah,
absolutely.
There's two things that jump to my mind. One is like this attempt to speed run career development, which unfortunately, like, you can't speed run developing your career and developing your skills. You might get lucky, and all of us do get lucky in some cases, and an opportunity comes by. But what you said about it takes 3 years to break into an industry, that was absolutely my experience coming up to help desk. Is it took me 2 years to get a job in tech at all. And then I had to spend years on help desk learning all the stuff that I wasn't taught in any of my formal education about how to actually troubleshoot hardware issues and how to just deal with people, because that is also a skill that you have to learn. So this idea that you're going to go from getting 12 certifications on AWS technologies and then landing your dream job and then making 6 figures all within 6 to 9 months, I think that's a terrible expectation to set for people who, you know, sign up for whatever program you're running, if you're one of the cloud influencers out there. But it works for their marketing. And I guess that's part of the problem.
And just to touch on those golden jackets, like, I've known folks that have, and this is not even recent, this is like 2-3 years ago, that had every single AWS certification, and they were hired because of it with a very well-known cloud firm in Toronto. And they were let go 6 to 9 months later, because it turns out having all the certifications does not teach them how to work with customers and to try to get customers to buy into solutions. And I think that we've seen enough golden jackets now, and people have to understand that we've already seen like 40 golden jackets. trust me, that golden jacket's not going to help you at this point. That hack has sailed. But I do feel a bit frustrated with some content creators. Like, I understand that everybody wants to shine, but, you know, I do feel that we are getting a lot of people out here evangelizing this idea of these very short periods of being able to upskill and turn that over into a career. Or I should say that they are taking credit for skills that they have not gained themselves. Like, I've seen people where they're somehow marketing themselves as an expert within 6 to 9 months after getting their first cloud role. And they're pulling in a lot of people because they're saying, hey, look at me, I was able to do it. But, you know, I don't think that's necessarily reality for most. And, you know, that kind of concerns me for people that are out there. And I say it concerns me because I know people put a lot of their own money on the line and they're projecting that timeline of this person did it in 6 months. I'm going to do it in 6 months. They're saying this is what they did. That's what I'm going to do. And, you know, I just feel bad for people.
Absolutely. But you're in a desperate situation. That's a very scary situation to be in, especially if they've already bought into someone else, the folks that you've described that say, you know, come here, come take this certification. 6 months from now, you'll go get a role at Google and you'll be set for life. And of course, it doesn't work like that. And you're out all this money and time, and good luck to you figuring it out now. You know, you've done the course. I'm done with you.
Yeah. Why folks do this, I don't know. I don't think it's always malicious, but it is what it is. And I'm just hoping that we have some other voices out there louder trying to say what looks realistic in terms of those goals. I think, Ned, you were saying like your journey was similar where it took multiple years and then you started getting your role. I know that some people say that, and I'm not saying this is a bad idea, but I see people, they say the first job I get is 40, 50K. Then I job hop next year and then it's 80K. Then I job hop the next year and it's 120, 160K. And that's really cool. It never looked like that for me. I can tell you it took many, many years. And then all of a sudden it went from this to like that, but it was like 5, 6 years in between. And so, you know, again, I think that there are people that can do it, but whether you're going to do it is a different story.
Just a brief pause to ask, did you know Packet Pushers has a job board? Whether you're looking to find or fill your next great IT infrastructure role, the Packet Pushers job board is the place to go. It's easy to post, easy to browse, and easy to apply. So whether you've got IT talent or you're looking for IT talent, visit jobs.packetpushers.net and get to work. That's jobs.packetpushers.net.
Yeah, I think definitely about setting realistic expectations. The first 10 years of my tech career, I was under six figures for sure. And that first entry level job, I actually took a pay cut to go do it because I was a store manager in the mall prior to that. And going to work for help desk, I took like a $6,000 a year pay cut to go work on help desk. But I knew over time that that would pay off. But it definitely was a bit of a sacrifice initially. The other thing that I was thinking about as we were talking through all of this is sort of the skills inflation that can happen on resumes and how that can make it a lot more difficult on the hiring side to differentiate between the people who actually have the skills and those who are just putting it on a piece of paper and hoping you don't ask about it. Because when I was on the hiring side of things, we would get resumes in that looked fantastic. And after the first interview, you'd ask them a few probing questions and immediately realize that they hadn't read past the first paragraph on any of these technologies.
You know, I think that there's a few reasons for that. Like if you go to LinkedIn or you go to Indeed, every single job, every alternate one looks completely different.
Mm.
Like because they're going to the largest funnel, the most generic funnel, and they're typing the most generic role. And also in our industry for cloud, these roles do not align the same for the responsibility. So something can be called a cloud engineer that looks like DevOps, that looks like you're a programmer, that looks like you don't even touch code. So they're all really, really different. And I think the thing is that people are going and they're seeing this job, this job, this job, this job. And one will be Snowflake and the next one will be SAP HANA and the next one will be something else. And they're going, this is impossible. I'm never going to be able to do it. And so I'm just going to fake it till I make it. And so they'll just update their resume accordingly. And again, they're doing this for like hundreds of jobs. So then when they finally do land a job, you know, they have to then speak to those things and they can't. So I think that's the issue. Another thing is that I've heard students where they tried to apply with their minimal experience, honestly, and they actually did get interviews. And the people that were the hiring managers were saying, hey, you need to show more experience. And some of them actually gave them the advice of saying, go back and embellish some of your actual things, because they're like, we're not going to hire you, but if somebody else wants you, maybe you can go embellish some of those other jobs that didn't really have those responsibilities. And so that's kind of an issue where people feel they have to fake it till they make it. But, you know, I always say you should own it till you know it. And, you know, I think the issue really is that people just don't try to specialize and focus on one thing. So like one of my students came back to me 6-7 years ago and I taught them Ruby on Rails. They wanted to leave their work. They weren't laid off or anything. They just wanted a better job. And so they were able to land an interview with a company that uses Ruby on Rails that's also in the same vertical of like whatever it is. It's not real estate. It's like general contracting, like software. And so, you know, they were specifically fine-tuned to get that next role. So I feel that the more you narrow your skills into a specific thing, the more opportunities you'll see. That's why I tell folks to try to find a project if it's in real estate, if it's in fitness, if it's in fintech, if it's in whatever, the stacks will start aligning because generally, like if you go into Toronto and you work in fintech, they all like using Spring Boot. I don't know why, but they love to use Java Spring Boot. So when you pick those things, you'll narrow it down and you should have more opportunities. And if you don't, build the thing that you wish was there and try to attract people based on that.
Kyler, you'd mentioned earlier the process of learning in public, and both of you do this, and I do this as well, is just writing blog posts or Medium posts about a problem you encountered, an issue you had to work through, or a thing that you wanted to build. And I think, Andrew, you kind of alluded to the fact that some people try to speed run that aspect of it too, or at least optimize it. So they're going to find out what are the most popular keyword searches, and then they're going to write an article that's specifically tailored around those keyword searches, which is great for Google results, but it doesn't really show that you're solving a novel thing. And the reason those keyword searches become important is because people didn't realize they needed to know something. And so I think that to a certain degree, writing original stuff and also stuff you're passionate about is going to win out at the end, because I might be searching for a very specific error message or a very specific problem, and that's not keyword optimized, but I'm going to find your post because I have the same problem you did.
That's the experience that I've had where it's like, I'm looking for a thing and I'm like, oh, I end up on Ned's content or I end up on Adrian's content or someone because they were thinking about the same thing and they probably thought it was something that was not well documented or very hard. And so it appeared there. Or people have found my content where they're talking about, like, this was like career advice about like, how do the roles line up? And I was the only person talking about it in that level of depth. So, you know, you can produce content and then optimize it later. But I think that people are going out there and I don't know how many times I'm going to see someone do an article on ClickOps on how to set up an RDS instance. We don't need 20 more of those. Do you know what I mean? We need to see something that is unique to you. And I would say it's even more fiercely competitive because you have ChatGPT and you have to write something that thing can't produce. Or if it does, it better be referencing your article, right? You know what I mean? So, and it becomes more authentic if you're using newer technologies, or not even necessarily new technologies, but areas that have been long gone neglected. And it happens all the time. The other day, I was looking up something. I was doing my AWS refresh course for the solution architect. I'm doing cloud networking. I'm the worst at cloud networking. And I was trying to figure out how to spit up a jump box using Guacamole and using RDP to Windows. And I could not find a single one for Guac AWS, is their own variant of it, to connect RDP to an Amazon Windows instance launched on AWS. Just couldn't find it. I found things similar to it and kept banging my head against the wall trying to figure it out. And so I know if I made that, right, because I can't find it anywhere and I can't figure it out myself, that would be of value to people. That's the thing that you want to post.
Right. Because I'm sure other people have found that problem and solved it and never wrote an article about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that everybody could benefit from. And I want to like really harp on one important thing you said. ChatGPT can only write articles about things that people have already written about. It doesn't write original posts. And so if you want to beat ChatGPT in terms of content, just write something new. I may be oversimplifying, but I think that's the way around it as someone who does write a lot of blog posts. I just write about something that it doesn't know.
And that is totally possible. There's things that just intersect that nobody matched before. And it can also be from a very specific perspective. So like my issue with the Guacamole might not be an issue for someone that is really good at cloud networking and knows how to configure that manually and works with Windows servers all the time. I don't do that, right? I'm on the developer side of it. So when I write it, it's going to be from that developer lens. The people are going to be searching the way I would search for that kind of stuff. And that's how they're going to discover it. But yeah, I would just say when you think of ChatGPT, just think of some like, what's the word, smooth brain? Where that's what, like, yes, it's spitting stuff out, but it's not as smart as you think it is.
I want to pull us back to something you said earlier, too. So you talked about passion, and in the document you showed us before, passion as maybe a requirement to land these jobs. And I think that's hard for people who maybe see IT as a path to, you know, making money, paying the bills, but don't feel like this is their calling in life. This is the most important thing they'll ever do. So what's the role of passion in here? Do you have to be passionate to succeed?
So the heading I put, this is a private document, which is going to be a community document at some point that I would like to share with everybody. But the heading is passion no longer required. And the reason I was talking about this was that a while back, you know, 6-9 months ago, we were seeing, maybe even a year ago, we were seeing a lot of job postings that were saying passion required as the first line item. Right. And that was for quite a while, to be honest. It wasn't like it just happened all of a sudden. It was only for a period, but like for a few years that was happening. And I think that this is as the water was starting to slowly boil and tech jobs are becoming more mainstream because, you know, when I got into the industry, and I think for a lot of folks, money wasn't a factor. Like I got into the tech industry because my mom fixed computers. It was the family business. I couldn't even think of anything else that I would do. I couldn't imagine getting any other kind of job. And the idea of just getting to work in tech all day was amazing. And then getting paid anything, you get to eat pizza, was a great thing. And so I think that as people found out that there was more opportunities and the bar of entry became a bit easier or systemized, again, it's a speculation, but maybe that manifested itself in these job postings where they're saying, hey, we're looking for passion required. But the community did not take good reception to that. And they said, this is people trying to pay less than what people are worth and to look to exploit people. And I'm not going to argue with that. I definitely think there was exploitation of all these people that were really seriously into tech. And so I think it's actually a good thing that more people are getting into tech that are not necessarily passionate. But the other thing that I just really want to say about that is whether you need passion or not, it's not something you're going to quit. It's a lifestyle, right? If you're going to be in tech, you know what I mean? You better be in for the long haul because it's a lot of work and you're going to have to keep on relearning. And if you don't like what you're doing, you're not going to like the next 30 years, right? Or however long you're going to be in it. So, you know, maybe we just need to reframe that.
I think that's a wonderful reframing, particularly for that boot camp framing that like you'll take this and then you'll be done. And then you can get all the jobs and you can work forever and it's easy, but that's not it. I agree with everything you said there, that this is a lifestyle. This is hard and you'll be learning for the rest of your life because this industry keeps growing and changing. And if that isn't something that makes you excited or at least interested enough to do it, you're going to wash out. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just you can make some money for a few years, but it is hard to stay in it. You have to keep learning.
If folks want a role that does not change or doesn't change too much or very slowly, trades is a great option. You know, we need more tradespeople. There's nothing wrong with trades. I think trades is great, but yeah, it's just a different kind of career and different kind of thing. But if you're scatterbrained like me and you want things to be constantly new, then it's great.
Yeah, there's a number of times that I've thought, you know, maybe I should just become an electrician. Not that things in the world of electricity don't change. They certainly do. There's new standards and there's continuing education, but the pace of innovation is definitely different. But I'd say in the same way that it's, you know, 3 to 5 years to really break into the world of tech, you have to spend 3 to 5 years in like training and apprenticeships and all the other standard things that they've put in place to work in trades. To get to, I guess it's like journeyman, and then you can eventually become master. I think that's the titles that it goes by. So you're still going to be in it for the long haul. And well, hopefully you like the thing that you're doing if you're going to be doing it for the next 30 years. At what point would you say to someone, maybe tech isn't for you? Like, you know, you've been searching, you've done the boot camp. Maybe it's time to turn your attention somewhere else.
I don't like really telling people what they should and shouldn't do, but there has been instances where I felt it was in their best interest not to do tech. You know, I think there's a baseline ability of being able to troubleshoot. And there are just some folks like they just cannot generate creative ideas. They cannot stick with problems and they want everything handed to them. And it's hard to say because like early on, some people just need a lot more time, like 2-3 years in. But I've seen some people where it's like, you know, there's no way. Yeah, because you don't have those fundamental skills, right? So I would just say that there's indicators that suggest to me that you might not want to do it, but it's up to them if they want to keep on going. It's like troubleshooting. How long do you stick with a problem? I'm sure there's other ones. I'm on the spot. I'm better writing things down and then bringing them back here. But I think those two stick out to me is where I would say there it'd be a challenge for people.
I swear the number of times I've ended a work day and I'm going about my day and I'm like cutting vegetables for dinner and I'm like, I get it. That's why it didn't work. I need to go write this down before I forget it. That troubleshooting part of your brain is just engaged all the time, I swear.
But yeah, if you're looking for a paint by numbers job, this is not it.
Right.
Right. You know, if you're looking to press a button at an interval of every minute, that's not the job. And those jobs are the ones that usually get automated out too. So,
yes. Unfortunately. Well, I guess fortunately, because those are pretty boring jobs to a certain degree. So I'm curious, as we kind of bring this in for a landing, if you had like one piece of advice to give to job seekers out there, what would it be?
And this is just basically recapping what we talked about, which is set a goal of 3 years out. Make sure you have a runway long enough and you're going to have your primary job to support you in that transition. If you can't get a job or get anyone's attention, make your own opportunities, because at the end of the day, like if someone's not going to give you the job, you can always go ahead. Tech is tech. You can go ahead and make the thing that you want to make and create your own opportunities.
And what about the companies out there that are trying to hire individuals? Do you have any advice for them in terms of their approach or what they're doing today?
I think the challenge here is that companies should be really working with me as hiring partners and taking on this highly qualified talent that I've created and trained, because I just feel so frustrated to see people spend 6 to 9 months and I put them through everything and they are job ready, but these companies still want to utilize their existing practices for testing, right? So be open to new ways of testing candidates. For applicants.
Yeah. Always be iterating and take the feedback as well. That's part of the whole DevOps thing, right? We could talk about all kinds of other things in terms of recruiters and hiring agencies and all that kind of stuff, but our time is limited, unfortunately. So Andrew, if people are hungry for more, they want to hear more about your thoughts, where can they find you on this wonderful internet?
Good question. I think LinkedIn's a pretty good place to find me. So if you want to find me, just type in Andrew W.C. Brown. It's easy to remember those middle initials. Just think water closet. It's not what it stands for. That way you'll easily find me. I'm also on Twitter, pending it still exists in the future for this video. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for being a guest today on Day 2 Cloud. And hey, virtual high fives to all of you beautiful listeners for tuning in. If you have suggestions for future shows, we would love to hear them. You can find us on the podcast page. That's packetpushers.net. Or you can find us on LinkedIn as well and just shoot us a message. Let us know what you want to hear about on the podcast. You can find me, I'm Ned Belavance, at nedinthecloud.com, and my amazing co-host, Kyler Middleton, blogging over on Medium, and we are both active on LinkedIn. And hey, if you happen to be a cloud vendor out there and you've got a way cool cloud product you want to share with our audience of IT professionals, you could become a Day 2 Cloud sponsor. You'll reach several thousand listeners, all of whom have problems to solve. Maybe your solution fixes their problem, but they're not going to know that unless you tell them about it on our show. You can find out more at packetpushers.net/sponsorship. Until next time, just remember, cloud is what happens while IT is making other plans.